Our next guest is always one of my favorites. He is a best-selling author. He joins us to make the case that play is a profound driver of future invention. His new book, Wonderland, How Play Made the Modern World, explores how pursuits born from wonder and delight have led to essential breakthroughs in computing, communication, and connecting the world. Illuminating the history of ideas, Johnson shows how our desire for amusement has shifted our perspective about public spaces and led to the creation of parks, zoos, taverns, and coffee houses, of all which have played a key role in revolutionizing society. In every case, from 19th century illusionist to today's virtual reality, Johnson shows how innovations come from unexpected places, including the technological breakthroughs of Snow White, to the way that games from chess to space war have made possible crucial advancements in computing. Again, the name of the new book is Wonderland, How Play Made the Modern World. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Stephen Johnson to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, it's great to be there. That was a lovely description of the book. It made me want to read it.
Well, yes. I'm glad you wrote it. It is a beautifully put together book. It has great pictures and artifacts and really fascinating. It's fun to look at as well as to read.
Yeah, it's a great object. I've had very little to do with the actual design of the book, but and that makes it a good gift, I would like to point out. It's a lovely holiday gift.
Well, even, and as you know this, Stephen, even if you did not have anything to do with the design, still take credit for it, okay?
Yeah, it was all me. I physically, personally assembled every single copy.
Your name's on it, pal. Take credit for it. Well, so what brought you down this path to say this is the object that I want to create?
Yeah, well, it came out of, on some level, there's kind of an immediate precedent for it, and then it was a very long precedent for it. So the immediate precedent is that I wrote this book and we did this PBS series, How We Got to Now, 2 years ago, about the history of innovation and the history of things in the modern world that we kind of take for granted that, you know, have these amazing stories behind them. And that was a really fun mode to work in. And there's so many stories you could tell. And so I wanted to kind of continue that. This is in some ways a kind of a sequel to How We Got to Now. But I wanted to have an overarching argument as well. I didn't want to just be like, here are a couple more things in their history. You know, I wanted to be making a point about the world. And over the course of my career, really dating back all the way to grad school, and including a couple of books that I wrote 10 years ago, like Everything Bad is Good for You, I've been interested in play and in games. I've written a lot about games. I studied a bunch in grad school about the department stores in the 19th century and all these things. So I had enough interest to know that there was an interesting and probably persuasive argument to be made about the role of play and delight in society. So I had enough to kind of trust myself to go into this field. And then once I started researching it, it turned out, I mean, I could have written 3 books on this topic. There's so many different stories that you could tell. And it's just so fun. It was so fun to research.
It seems if you look at our world through the lens of a newspaper, a daily newspaper, you have your news section, you have your business section, you have your sports section. This would be the arts and leisure, right? The way you break this up, fashion and shopping, music, taste, illusion, games, public space. Those are the topics that you are addressing. How did you come to those 6 as a way of breaking it up?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe the kind of, that's a good way of putting it. I haven't quite imagined it that way in terms of the newspaper, but I guess the way to think about it is that all that stuff that's happening, you know, in the third section of the paper, in the arts and leisure section or whatever it's called, actually ends up in the long run shaping a lot of what happens on the front page.
Right.
And that's really, it's like it kind of ends up infecting or you know, infiltrating the front page in the long run, but it starts off as arts and leisure and delight and all that kind of stuff. So what was the question? You want me to give an example of that, how that worked?
Yes, I will take that as an answer. The question I asked you, but you can certainly choose your own adventure here, was the way you broke it up, how did you decide to do in those 6 ways?
Well, it was really, in each of those chapters, I had a kind of foothold In my history, just in terms of research that I'd done or things that I'd written. So, you know, as I said, I'd written about games in the past. I had studied the history of department stores, and so I knew some stories that would be great anchors for that chapter. I'd actually thought about doing an episode and a chapter for How We Got to Now on Illusion, and I'd kind of argued with the producers that we should do that for the show, and then I didn't win that argument, but I'd done some research for it, so I knew that would be a good chapter. So, it was, you know, each one I had a little kernel that I could kind of start with, and then once I had that map, the last one was music, which ended up being one of the best chapters, and I'd always wanted to write about music, and it's really about the history of musical instruments and how much they impacted the history of computers, which you would think that computers and music are not really directly related to each other, but in fact, there's a really deep and kind of rich history that connects musical instrument design with the digital revolution.
When you decided to go down this path and to look at how play made the modern world, as you said earlier, you know, you could have done many more books on the subject. What parameters did you use to rein you in a little bit and to focus yourself onto the ultimate arc of the story?
I wanted to have places where the thing that I'm writing about is it has to be really about delight and not about some more pressing kind of survival value. So fashion, right? We have to have clothes.
Yes.
We don't have to have necessarily beautiful clothes. We don't have to have clothes. So for instance, there's a big argument in the book about calico and chintz, these cotton fabrics that arrived in Europe in the 1600s or even a little bit before that, but they really took off in London in particular in the late 1600s, had a huge wave of interest from kind of well-to-do women wearing these beautiful fabrics that were soft for the first time because they were cotton. Now, up until that point, people wore basically wool underwear, which, as you can imagine, was not fun at all. And they had these beautiful patterns, and so they were just delightful. And this sets off this chain reaction where all of a sudden there's an immense amount of money being made, and there's this huge trade imbalance with India. And all these members of the traditional wool industry in England are outraged by these women who are buying these, you know, imported fabrics. And it begins this period of political turmoil, really an anti-globalism kind of reaction where calico and chintz are banned. There are hundreds of pamphlets and plays written about these calico madams who are ruining British society. And at the same time, a number of inventors and engineers in England begin to think, well, wait a second, maybe we could manufacture cotton here and maybe we could make these patterns and not import them. And that's the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. I mean, that is really where it starts. And so when you ask about like what's the criteria, there's a great example of it. It was something that began with delight, but that ended up triggering world historic changes in society that, right, that, you know, were not just about delight. There were some cases about exploitation and bad things happening in society. But that mix is really what I tried to find in all the case studies in the book.
Another example, you give voice to the much maligned or often maligned Dorito chip.
Yeah. So, again, this is about globalization, right? The reason we have a global economy in the first place is because of the spice trade, right? That was the first time thousands of years ago when people started saying we could ship these items all around the world. And so I have a whole chapter on the spice trade, which is just such a crazy story. But it starts with an analysis of the ingredients list on the Doritos packaging, which is endless. Like The Onion ran a parody a couple years ago where they were like, Frito-Lay celebrates the Doritos 1,000,000th ingredient. there's so many ingredients. But if you look at that list, what I did in the book is I kind of outlined where they all came from, all those different foods or flavors. And you know, some of them came from South America, some of them came from India, some of them came from, you know, Western Europe. All these, you know, a whole world of flavor converges on your tongue when you bite into this Doritos chip. And the reason why we can have that kind of global palate now is it really started with the taste for spices, for things like clove and cinnamon, that that people first developed a taste for thousands of years ago.
You have a great line in that chapter where you say, put aside all the chemistry lab mystery ingredients we associated with processed junk food and consider just the ingredients you actually recognize as food.
So, yeah.
Maybe hard, but you can still do it.
Yeah.
Ultimately, what do you hope people take away from the book?
Well, I think there are two sides of it. One is it's a really fresh take on history and how we got to now, in a sense, that I hope people will find entertaining and illuminating. But it's also a reminder of the importance of that playful state of mind. You know, it's not written as a book of like news you can use and apply at work. But I think there is a lesson there about the importance of the connection between kind of creativity and play and delight and surprise. And if you're in a work environment or in your own life where you aren't getting enough of that, it's important to remember how important that can be.
The name of the book, Wonderland, How Play Made the Modern World. It's published by Riverhead Books. Stephen Johnson, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much, and best of luck. It's a great book, and I really appreciate you coming on and talking about it.
It was great to be back. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Again, Stephen Johnson's new book is Wonderland. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.